Good morning, everyone. Let us pray together. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. I've been feeling inspired this morning by the mystic Kabir, so I thought I would read a bit from the introduction into Rabindranath Tagore's translation of Kabir's poems. The poet Kabir, a selection from whose songs is here for the first time offered to English readers, is one of the most interesting personalities in the history of Indian mysticism. Born in or near Benares, of Mohammedan parents, and probably about the year 1440, he became in early life a disciple of the celebrated Hindu ascetic Ramananda. Ramananda had brought to the northern India the religious revival of the Ramanuja, the great 12th century reformer of Brahmanism had initiated in the south. This revival was in part a reaction against the increasing formalism of the orthodox cult, in part an assertion of the demands of the heart as against the intense intellectualism of the Vedanta philosophy. The exaggerated monism, which is the philosophy proclaimed, it took in Ramanuja's preachings the form of an ardent personal devotion to the god Vishnu, as representing the personal aspect of divine nature. That mystical religion of love, which everywhere makes its appearance at a certain level of spiritual culture, and which creeds and philosophies are powerless to kill, though such a devotion is indigenous in Hinduism and finds expressions in many passages of the Bhagavad Gita, there was in its medieval revival a large element of syncretism. Ramananda, through whom its spirit is said to have reached Kabir, appears to have been a man of wide religious culture and full of missionary enthusiasm. Living at the moment in which the impassioned poetry and deep philosophy of the great Persian mystics, Attar, Sa'di, Jalaluddin Rumi, and Hafiz, were exercising a powerful influence on the religious thought of India, he dreamed of reconciling this intense and personal Mohammedan mysticism with the traditional theology of Brahmanism. Some have regarded both these great religious leaders as influenced also by Christian thought and life, but as this is a point upon which competent authorities hold wide divergent views, its discussion is not attempted here. We may safely assert, however, that in their teachings, two, perhaps three, apparently antagonistic streams of intense spiritual culture, as Jewish and Hellenistic thought met in the early Christian church, it is one of the outstanding characteristics of Kabir's genius that he was able, in his poems, to fuse them into one. and from the 18th poem from Songs of Kabir. The light of the sun, the moon, and the stars shine bright. The melody of love swells forth, and the rhythm of love's detachment beats the time. Day and night, the chorus of music fills the heavens, and Kabir says, "My beloved one gleams like lightning flash in the sky." Do you know how the moments perform their adoration? Waving its row of lamps, the universe sings in worship day and night. There are hidden banner and the secret canopy. There the sound of the unseen bells is heard. Kabir says, their adoration never ceases. There the Lord of the universe sitteth on his throne. The whole world does its works and commits its errors, but few are the lovers who know the beloved. The devout seeker is he who mingles in his heart the double currents of love and detachment, like the mingling of the streams of Ganges and Jamuna. In his heart, the sacred waters flow day and night, and thus the round of births and deaths is brought to an end. Behold, what a wonderful rest is in the Supreme Spirit, and he enjoys it who makes himself meet for it. Held by the cords of love, the swing of ocean of joy sways to and fro, and a mighty sound breaks forth in song. See what a lotus blooms there. See what a lotus blooms there without water. And Kabir says, "My heart's bee drinks its nectar." What a wonderful lotus it is that blooms at the heart of the spinning wheel of the universe. Only a few pure souls know of its true delight. Music is all around it, and there the heart partakes of the joy of the infinite sea. Kabir says, "Dive thou into that ocean of sweetness. Thus let all errors of life and of death flee away. Behold how the thirst of the five senses is quenched there, and three forms of misery are no more." Kabir says, "It is the sport of the unattainable one. Look within, and behold how the moonbeams of that hidden one shine in you." This is a wonderful, wonderful mystical poem. Now, a mystic is one who stretches out beyond the five senses and realizes that there is much more to the human soul and to this universe than what is derived strictly through the five senses. Most of mankind today is relegated to these five senses and to the body, and everything drives human behavior from that standpoint. But we hear here of some wonderful truths, mystical truths, truths that take us beyond these five senses. If we begin with the beginning of the poem, "The light of the sun, the moon, and the stars shine bright. The melody of love swells forth, and the rhythms of love's detachment beats the time. Day and night, the chorus of music fills the heavens." And Kabir says, "My beloved one gleams like the lightning flash in the sky." Now, we know from mystical lore that the sun within our own being is the place of the Ajna. That is where the great Purusha, the light of lights, shines within us all. And that the moon is at the solar plexus, that is the place of the second sun. It is the moon. It is the lesser light, but it is a light nevertheless. That is the place of intuition. That is the place where you get a gut feeling as to something may be coming, something may happen to you. You get a good feeling or a bad feeling about a person. This is the second light or the lesser light. The greater light, the sun, is that direct knowledge, that direct revelation from the infinite. And as it passes into you and streams through your own consciousness, you know, and you know that you know. And then the stars are all lined up along the different chakras. And in Revelations, it talks about the seven stars and the seven candlesticks. And these are the places of light within your own being. Now, when most of us close our eyes, we see nothing but darkness. But for the mystic, for the yogi, for that one who delves into the interior life, a new occurrence begins to happen. You see there the stars. They begin to light up within your own spine. I remember in my early days on this path that I once saw this beautiful deep red at the spiritual eye, and surrounding it was a beautiful gold. And I hadn't ever remembered seeing that kind of representation in the chakras. I'd seen a few. I hadn't paid too much attention to them. And it was beautiful, and it remained within my inner vision for some time. And then, at some point, a friend of mine had a drawing. It was from the Tibetan tradition. And there, in the second chakra, was this deep, deep blood red surrounded by this golden yellow light. And it was exactly as I had seen it in my interior vision much time before that. And so these things begin to reveal themselves to you, begin to see the sun shining there. Now, the other day I was looking with closed eyes, and there was an outer light that had been shining, but when I closed my eyes, an inner light revealed itself that was much more powerful than anything of the outer light. And so this inner light begins to reveal itself to you. You see these things. There was a time when I was in meditation and my attention was drawn to the very center bottom part of my cranium. And as I gazed up, I saw this beautiful blue ceiling. I call it a ceiling because there's a sense of it being curved in a dome-like kind of curvature, and yet there didn't seem to be any limits to this beautiful blue light as it extended out and out and out. And so these inner lights begin to shine for you. You see them. And you can hear them as well. There is a melody. There is a song that goes with each one of these chakras. And it can be a steady kind of tone. Now, when you hear this sound, particularly the sound of many rushing waters that you hear at the sixth chakra, you attune your mind to it. And when you do that, you let your mind expand with that sound. And that sound has a purifying current to it. It is a reflection of the pure Om. We hear the Om chanted by various people, and that sound in itself is lovely and uplifting, particularly when it is chanted correctly. Now, to correctly chant the Om, you begin at the back of the throat, and the sound comes from the back of the throat, then through the middle part of your mouth, and then finally out through the closed lips of the And it's a complete sound. It represents every sound in the human vocabulary. And so it contains everything within that one sound, all vibration with it. That's from a human standpoint. From a sacred mystical standpoint, it comes in through the medulla. And it comes in and it begins to resound within you. And when it does, you can feel yourself expanding with it. Now, not everybody has all of these experiences, and some people sometimes, when they hear them described, can feel discouraged because they've not had these particular experiences. There is no proscription around exactly how these experiences come to you or when. And some people are more auditory-oriented, and so they hear more. Some people are more visual, so they see more. Some people are more of a feeling nature, and so they feel more. And many people see everything through their feeling. Intuition comes primarily through feeling. And you can feel a sound, you can feel a color. And so all the senses are interchangeable, you see. So you don't have to worry about it. And you don't have to worry about it at all. Because when you put yourself at the divine feet, then you surrender yourself there, and you know that whatever God does for you is done for your best. It is a tremendous thing to be able to surrender yourself to this divine life. You know, we take on so many things in this life. We worry about things. We think on things, and we think perhaps this world is coming apart at the seams, or we worry about how people behave, and certainly it's not that we shouldn't have any thought for this. But there is a greater thought underlying whatever we see in this passing show of this Leela that God has created. And that is that light is constantly seeking to express itself. When you see a tiny seed of a plant, of a tree, and you put that into the ground, if you didn't know, you would not even suspect that there is much going on with that seed. What could that tiny seed produce, you would say in your mind? But when you are an experienced gardener, you know exactly what that can produce. You know that that can become a flower, that can become a shrub, that can become a huge tree with time. And yet, looking at this tiny seed, you wouldn't give it hardly a second glance. Maybe you'd eat it and chomp it down. But you wouldn't think of it as being a giant tree. Not in that moment. When the seed is sown into you, and it begins to germinate itself, if you're constantly digging it up and looking for progress and wondering what's going on with it, you disturb the seed. And you actually delay the progress. If you have perfect trust and faith that the seed is sown, that it is growing, that it is exactly right and perfect for you, and you have that kind of trust, you are creating the ideal conditions for that seed to grow, to blossom, and to come into its full glory. And its full glory is taking you on a tremendous journey into your own realization of your own true self. Now, it's Kabir who said, when some disciples were trying to ask him for minute information about the path, and he says, path presupposes distance. And since there is no distance between you and the divine, there is no path. A path is just a way of thinking about it. It makes me laugh, he continued. This is not a direct quote, but a paraphrase. It makes me laugh to hear of a fish in the ocean that is thirsty, because we are surrounded in divinity. We are surrounded in sacredness. And when we look out through these two eyes and we see this world, perhaps we see anything but sacredness. We don't see the light. We don't see divinity dwelling within all beings and all creatures. We see violence. We see selfishness. We see fear. We see many, many things through these two eyes in terms of human behavior. But when you know that each and every person is a seed, and within them that seed is seeking to germinate and to grow, waiting for the conditions to be just right, it's said that certain trees cannot germinate and produce new offspring until a forest fire comes through and certain temperatures are reached, and that's what makes those seeds spring forward and to begin its action of growing into a tree. That's a very interesting thing, isn't it? Perhaps there's something similar within certain human beings that they can't germinate, they can't properly get going, unless they've been in the fires of testing, unless they've gone through certain experiences in this life. And due to those experiences and the heat of those experiences, the seed is then properly prepared, it's triggered. And now it's ready to produce. It's ready to begin its growth. And it couldn't have done that before that moment. So we can't look at an individual and say how near or how far they are from the goal. We can only know that that seed exists inside of them and that it's waiting for the perfect time for it to begin its new growth. In the meantime, it's working out its human evolutionary tasks. Now, when some people seem to be going everywhere against the light and everywhere against what is good and what is righteous, what is Dharma, that they may be, in fact, preparing the ground. Now, you'd like to say, wouldn't it be nice for us all to learn our lessons in a nice, methodical, smooth kind of way, and we all take steady steps towards the goal. But when we look around us, we see that that's oftentimes not true. I was listening to a man speak the other day, and he was relating to some of the people who are going to jail these days for fraud and schemes that they've run in the stock markets. And he had done this himself. He had been in California, and he had gotten involved in the real estate market. He had several enterprises all going at the same time. In order to keep one going, he would borrow money without telling his partners he was doing so from another one of his enterprises and inject the needed cash into the first one. And he kept on going like this. And it's called fraud. And it's stealing, actually, because he wasn't being upfront. He wasn't being open with what he was doing. He's stealing money from one company and putting it into another. Eventually, that caught up with him. The crash of the real estate market in the early 90s brought it all to a halt. And he's going to prison, but he's going to one of those rather posher prisons, if there's such a thing, but one that's not for the hardened criminals. And his girlfriend had come to visit him on the day before he was to go to one of these lesser prisons. And she had heard about where he was going to, and she decided to drive out there and take a look. She'd gone into accidentally a restricted zone. And when she realized it was a restricted zone, she started to turn around. And when she was turning around and she was feeling a little anxious about all this, she beeped the horn. When she beeped the horn, the guards looked out and took down her license plate. They ran the license plate, found out she had been visiting him in his in-between prison before he was about to be sent out to this other one. Perhaps they thought she was there casing the joint to see how to break him out or something, but they said instead of going to this light security prison, you're going to San Quentin. That's quite a turnaround of events. So he walks into San Quentin, and here are these, many of them, big, burly guys, and some of them murderers and rapists and anything you can think of. And he was scared. And eventually he adjusted. He was there for several years. And a great thing happened for him. He began to think about his life. He said a sudden change began to happen because before he was always on the run. He always feared that it would catch up with him. And it was always in the back of his mind. He had cars. He had expensive homes. He had the best of everything. But in the back of his mind, he knew that he was running a game and that the game could run out on him. And the further he got into it, the more he realized that eventually it was all going to catch up with him. And so when it finally did, and he went to prison, he actually felt a relief. It was a relief not to be involved in that kind of life any longer. And he turned his life around. He found religion, you might say. He found God. He had nothing but a small cell. The toilet's right there in the cell. There's no privacy. There's no nothing there. Like he said, the cell was smaller than his bathroom had been, and it's one of his many houses that he had had before. And there he was. It's just he himself and his eye. And that was it. And he said that he hoped for these other individuals that there was actually a time of potential, a time of great renewal for them, that he said, the first few months, don't expect it. He says, because you're running on adrenaline. Everything's new. You're learning everything new, trying to figure out how to stay safe and all the rest of it. But eventually you settle into a routine, and then it all begins to come in on you. And for him, it was a huge relief, you see. He had that seed growing within him. And that great fire of testing, what was required in his case in order to get that seed, to trigger that seed into growing. And so we can't look at another person's life and know exactly what's what for them, how close or how far away they are from that inner awakening that's going to come to them. So all these lights begin to come into the sky, and this lightning flash in the sky that Kabir refers to, you see it at first as a lightning flash. It's a brilliant light that flashes across your forehead as you have your eyes closed and you're looking at this mystical eye that's right there within your own being. And then he continues, do you know how the moments perform their adoration? Waving its row of lamps, the universe sings in worship day and night. There are the hidden banner and the secret canopy. And there the sounds of the unseen bells is heard. The unseen bells are these various sounds within the chakra. It says that the heart chakra sounds like a bell. Another sound is like a high-pitched flute that's playing. Another that comes to you is like an ocean roar that's roaring to you. Another is like a bumblebee that has a deep resonance within your spine. All of these are heard, and all of these are signs of the Great Awakening. The hidden banner is the spine within your own being, and the canopy is the awakening of the divine consciousness, the cosmic consciousness. It's under which we are all existing. Kabir says, there adoration never ceases. There the Lord of the universe sitteth on his throne. Now, if you were to imagine people who had died or angels sitting all around the throne of God, and there's some music playing, and after a while you might think, well, what else is there? You know, what's to do here? Because we can't really conceive of the vibration and the experience that we would have if we were really sitting at the throne of God in this way. The thrill of bliss, of joy, the realizations that would dawn upon your mind, the greatest of thoughts, the greatest of realizations, just exploding into vast universes right within your own consciousness. And it never ends. It never ends. There's a constant unfolding. God is infinite. God is infinite. We cannot really conceive of that in the human mind, because the human mind thinks all in terms of parameters. It thinks of beginnings and ends and middles. It cannot really conceive of infinity, but we can experience it through this mystic insight. This mystic insight brings you into this interior world, and you experience the unending bliss. That is the adoration. And gratitude is always very close to being close to God. The definition, I think, you can tell for many people, a psychological definition, is someone who has no gratitude, no feeling for that at all. And I would say in every case that they are far from God. When you are close to God, you have an intense feeling of gratitude for everything. Even the smallest things that happen in your life bring up a sense of gratitude. And even if you're thrown into the fires of testing, and you know that this is required in order to activate the seed that is within you, wouldn't you give great gratitude for that, even if you might groan in the process? This is exactly what is right for you. And if it were not, your Heavenly Father would not have granted it to you. Now, even in the sense of karma, and things that come to you because of karma, it is through divine will. Because that is exactly what is needed for you in that moment. This is the great secret to finding happiness in your situation wherever you are at. To find that secret is to recognize that your life is perfect for you. Now, this doesn't mean that you don't have aspiration for more, that you don't want more, that you don't see more realization, more of whatever it is that you conceive of yourself for your own good. And yet you can still acknowledge that this moment is perfect for you, is perfect for the ones that you love, for perfect for the people that you know. And it extends out and out and out. This world is on an evolutionary course, and it looks pretty rugged at times. There are great evils that happen. There are great injustices that occur. And you look at those and you say, those can't be from God, and you would be right to say so in one sense. Because that is not the purity of God. That is not the expression of God vibration. That is a lower expression. That is a result of what man has done to man, and lower creatures have done to other lower creatures. But to say that it is all evolving towards that highest vibration would also be true. And so you see both. I can have it both ways in that way. I can say, yes, that is not God. When somebody steals, when somebody cheats, when somebody murders, when somebody tortures, that is not from God. You cannot say so. And yet, through those various experiences, we might rise up and experience something greater in life. And when we do, and we attune ourselves to that higher vibration, that then is God. And what we can say and know from that vantage point is that everything was always evolving towards that moment, and was the very path that took us towards our own state of realization. The whole world does its works, Kabir continues, and commits its errors, but few are the lovers who know the Beloved. The devout seeker is he who mingles in his heart and the double currents of love and detachment, like the mingling of the streams of the Ganges and Jamuna. Now, he's exactly right here, that the devout seeker is he who mingles in his heart the double currents of love and detachment. What does this mean? It means that the things that are passing in your life, the things that come and go, if it can be born, it can die. All of that you experience a certain detachment for. You take a step back from it. And you're able to observe it within yourself and within others. From that calm center within yourself, you're able to know through intuition, either through the solar plexus, which is the lesser sun within you, the moon within you, or whether it is through the ajna, and that is the direct light of knowing of the purusha. But through that calm mind, you can know what is in truth needed in the moment. If you need to take action, or whether you need to just remain in a still state and bless this world through the divine emanations coming through you. Either might be the case, and at any particular time, and you can only know when you are listening to your intuition within you. So you have a detachment to the passing things of this show. And yet love also finds a current through your life. Now, most human love is filled with attachment. I will love you if you behave in a certain way. I will love you if you say the right things, do the right things. And if you don't say or do those things, then I will no longer love you. This is human love, and it is love with attachment. And you can say that's a very natural state to be in a human sense. But there is a higher love, there's a greater love within you. And that is the divine love. And it can flow into you, through you, and out to the world from you. It can do it as a continuous stream of divine love. It's not dependent on what another person is saying or doing. If you see somebody who has fallen into error, you can have compassion and understanding for them. If you see another who has fallen into error, you can do everything in your power to help them find the right way again. But you do it out of love. And you can tell when you've fallen off, when you get very angry at another person, very disappointed, very hurt. Doesn't mean you won't experience any disappointment, no hurt, no sorrow about another person's shortcomings. But when you feel invested in it, when you feel carried away with that emotion, and then you feel like you want to push that person away, or maybe you want to harm them in some way, maybe you want to kill them for what they've done. This is all with attachment. Divine love is differently. It's constantly flowing out. Now, it doesn't mean you accept bad behavior, but you know that the soul within that person is God. And as such, that keeps flowing out to that individual. You know that that's the best thing that you can do for that person. Now, some people hear this and they go, well, you're saying that what they're doing is all right. You're giving tacit approval if you love them right where they're at. And I say, no. You can still discriminate that what that individual is doing is going to create harm for themselves and others. But what that individual needs most is love and light. And by you sending dark thoughts to them is not going to help them one iota to get that love and light. You might say, well, if they suffer, then they will get it. That will be the fire of awakening you're speaking of. And yes, that is true for people. But when you create suffering for another individual out of your anger, out of your hurt, you are not doing God's work. You are merely reacting out of the ego mind. And so it is time for us to experience that divine love, to stand up for truth, to stand up for light, to stand up for the things that we believe in. Yes, all of those things. But to love always. And to have that state of detachment within our heart so that we don't become ensnared in this world. In his heart, the sacred water flows day and night, and thus the round of births and deaths is brought to an end. When you experience the sacred waters of this divine love flowing through your heart, and there is detachment from the passing things and complete attunement to that divine love at all times, you have come somewhere. You have gone beyond the birth and death of things. You have entered into the eternal nature of the Godhead. And this is a tremendous thing when you have come into this state of being. Behold, what wonderful rest is in the Supreme Spirit. And he enjoys it who makes himself meet for it. Held by the cords of love, the swing of the ocean of joy sways to and fro. And a mighty sound breaks forth in song. See what a lotus blooms there without water. And Kabir says, my heart's bee drinks its nectar. Isn't this beautiful, beautiful expression of great, great truth here? Now, this is just one section of his writings. But it is beautiful, it is wonderful, it is perfect. It is said by many of the disciples of Larhe Mahasya that the great master Larhe Mahasya was an incarnation of Kabir. Whether this is true or not, but Master did say that Kabir received initiation from Babaji himself. And so, we feel there a kind of kindred spirit. When it came time that Kabir finally, after it said over 100 years, disciples say he lived for 120 years. And when he left the body, he had disciples who were both Muslims and Hindus. Now, for the Hindu culture, a householder, as Kabir was, he was a weaver and a householder, he would have been cremated. And for the Muslims, he would have been buried. And they began to argue over which was the right thing to do for him. They both felt kinship and a great love and loyalty towards him. And so Kabir finally, arising from his rest that he was speaking of here, informed them that they should take half of his body and bury it, and the other half they should take and they should cremate it. And that way they would both be happy, won't they? So it was in a coffin, and they unloosened the coffin, and when they did, they found a beautiful array of Kabir's favorite flowers. There was no physical body there at all, and so they took half of the flowers, and they buried half by the Muslims, and the Hindus took and cremated the other half. And so they were both happy with this. And even today, there is a temple and a mosque that sit next to each other in commemoration of Kabir. He's a wonderful unifying agent. And in this day and in this age, we need that message so greatly. Whether you're a Christian, whether you are a Jew, whether you're a Hindu, whether you are of Islam, it doesn't make any difference when you have these mystical experiences within you. When you have this mystic sun, this mystic light, this mystic love, you see, and this mystic sound, you have it all. You have it all. And then you have become what all the paths have pointed to. And each one of the religions and each one of the sects in the religions are all just various paths going up the one single mountain. And that mountain is the realization of this infinite spirit within you. So isn't it time for more and more beings to let go? It doesn't mean that you have to stop being Christian or Hindu or Muslim, but you recognize the universal and binding truths that are within each and every one of them. You let go of hatred. You let go of small-mindedness. It is a very small-minded person that says, my way is right and all others are wrong. It is time to give up these childish notions that lead to wars, that lead to suffering, that leads to anything that is not of God. But God is not contained in those kinds of actions in most cases. God stands aside and says, well, my children, I wait for you. And I wait for the day that you will awaken to this universal message. It is the message of the coming age. It is the message of the coming time. And by realizing that deeply, deeply within our own hearts and souls, we might come into that state where we will realize this great mystic truth. Carlo, would you lead us to some chants, please?
Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget thee, I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram.
Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of
thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being,
my heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet
and surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection
surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
To the light within you.
May this inner mystic life ever awaken itself.